Welcome to Indie Audio, the audio version of The Independent, a free progressive newspaper published in New York once a month. To learn more about the publication or find past episodes of Indie Audio, go to independent.org. That's independent.org. In this episode, we read Jamera Wakefield and Peter Rue's review of the theater play Sweat, written by Lynn Nottage and performed in Studio 54. This article appeared in the June issue of The Independent. Hillary Clinton called them a basket of deplorables. The National's Review's Kevin Williamson took an honest look at their welfare dependency addictions and family anarchy, and came to the awful realization that these dysfunctional, downscale communities deserve to die. Pundits first ignored and later chastised Rust Belt voters, particularly the now infamous white working class. But playwright Lynn Nottage took a novel approach. She listened to them. Inspired by Occupy Wall Street's popular rage against wealth inequality, Nottage began conducting extensive interviews with residents of Reading, Pennsylvania, in 2011. Once a thriving industrial hub, and today one of the poorest cities in America. The result of 2.5 years Nottage spent in the field is Sweat, up for 3 Tonys this month, including Best Play. Sweat doesn't focus solely on white workers, but it does illuminate the complexities of the Trump era, saying as much about why Black and Latino voters stayed home in November as why whites mobilized for Trump. It tells the story of a multiracial working class grappling with the impacts of automation and globalization, of workers striving for the American dream in an economy in which they are an afterthought. "What the fuck is NAFTA?" barks Tracy, interpreted by Joanna Day, a dyed-in-the-wool Reading native whose German grandfather helped construct many of the now boarded-up buildings that compromise the city's downtown. "Sounds like a laxative." The line, uttered early in the first act, foreshadows events to come, as friendships and familial bonds between the characters are tested, and in many ways broken, by forces beyond their control or understanding. John Lee Betty serves as Sweat's set designer, creating a beautiful rotating set that is often turned into the homey dive bar where most of the play's actions take place. It is here that Sweat's blue-collar characters gather to celebrate birthdays, blow off steam, dream of vacations that never materialize, gripe about the news, and settle their differences. The play moves back and forth between the year 2000, when one-by-one Reading's employers are shipping production abroad, and dawning of the 2008 financial crisis. During set changes, archival new footage flashes across the stage, marking the passage of time, but also hinting at the events beyond the bar, shaping the drama in otherwise hidden ways. The characters in Sweat admirably attempt to better their station, or at least hold on to the scraps of the American dream they already possess, as the town around them crumbles. Nottage seems to be asking the audience to think critically about not only the shortcomings of the American dream, but to consider the American dream as an amorphous, moving target. Steelworker Tracy and bartender Stan, interpreted by James Colby, recount the hard-working lives of their European ancestors, who, like them, stood on the manufacturing line. Injury forced Stan behind the bar counter, while Tracy is fighting to preserve her union as rumors of a lockout begin to spread. Her best friend Cynthia, interpreted by Michelle Wilson, dreams of surpassing racial and gender barriers at the factory by becoming a supervisor. Carlo Albin delivers what is perhaps the most tender and heart-wrenching of performances in this work as Oscar, the saloon's barback, a Spanish-speaking outsider who lacks the connections to receive a union card. Oscar has been wiping down tables and gathering empty beer mugs for years without a raise. When an opportunity to cross the factory's picket line and earn a higher wage eventually materializes, he leaps at the chance. As a steel company begins to lay off employees when their pensions are obliterated and their unions wither, rifts ensue between the characters that take the shape of violent prejudice, but which are clearly rooted in desperation. During the play's intermission, in true New York theater fashion, I chatted with my neighbors seated next to me. One insisted the characters represented Trump voters. "It's them. I know it's them," he said, pointing at the stage. Several theater goers turned and nodded as if to say, "Amen." There is a cathartic comfort in having someone to point to blame for the Trump presidency. But Nadich reminds us that capitalism, shown here in its post-millennial neoliberal incarnation, is the real culprit behind the bomb that shattered our ballot boxes. Loyal to no one, it carves racial and ethnic lines through the working class and forces its members to compete against one another, or worse, against nameless, unseen workers abroad who are desperate enough to be exploited for even less. Sweat does not give the impression that America will be great again or that it ever was for many of its inhabitants. It hucks no magical elixir for the downwardly mobile working class. Perhaps to a fault, Nottage's characters lack a sense of collective agency present in working class dramas of bygone eras, such as Waiting for the Lefty, which, while tragic, highlighted rank and file power on the shop floor. But we live in different times. Sweat takes the consequences of sweeping trade and economic policies crafted by liberal and conservative administrations alike and portrays their consequences on a human scale. Toward the end of the play, new footage of the 2008 bank bailouts flashes over the stage. It begs the question, when will the people of the Rust Belt receive theirs? In this episode, we read Jamera Wakefield and Peter Rue's review of the theater play Sweat, written by Lynn Nottage and performed in Studio 54 on Thursday, November 5th. This article appeared in the June issue of The Independent. That was the Indie Audio, the audio version of The Independent, produced by Elia Grant.